The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
He's Michael Coleman, the executive director of the Jimmy Hale Mission. This is a show called Mission Minded. It runs every Wednesday, twice here on Tony Curry Radio. And of course, now, wherever you get your podcast, we have ours up on Spotify. To search Tony Curry Radio, that's Curry with a K, Tony Curry Radio, or Mission Minded with Michael Coleman. You can listen to all the past episodes whenever you want on demand right here on Tony Curry Radio. Michael, how are you doing, man? I know you just got back from vacation. Hope you enjoyed your little spring break, a little spring vacation, right?
I did, and I feel incredibly well-rested and ready to go.
Well, I'm expecting a killer show out of you today, if I'm going to expect it. Hey, listen, last week we got into it. Listen, money is the backbone for everything, right? I mean, you have to have money to run a business. You have to have money to run a non-for-profit. We got into how to start a non-for-profit, and it's amazing. It was our most listened to show because we talked about how to acquire 501c3s, what you need to do that. We talked even some tax stuff. We talked about percentage of allocations. We talked about competition between non-for-profits and everything else. And so we really didn't get into what I really wanted to talk about, and that is how to actually raise the money if you're wanting to start a non-for-profit. So I'm Joe Schmo, and I've got a great tragedy in my life, and I decided I want to get behind it and have a purpose behind my tragedy. I want to start a non-for-profit, whatever that is, and I want to raise money and advocacy and awareness for whatever that non-for-profit is. But I need to raise the money to brand myself, to get my name out there, to start my website. And certainly if it's something where I'm allocating monies to different organizations that will benefit my tragedy and or my non-for-profit purpose here, then I need to raise money. And you see that every single day with the Jimmy Hale Mission, correct?
Sure.
Yeah. So let's start at the ground level. I'm starting out of my basement and I'm starting this non-for-profit. I don't know how big it is. I just want to make a difference in my community. Outside getting the word out to my friends and family and asking for contributions, what's the best way to tackle this? Let's start it.
Well, for me, and I've been through that process with a previous organization that I did start. And what I found is that I would talk to people about an idea, about the idea of the heart of what I want to do, what difference I wanted to make in the community. And what I found was people were very nice and very friendly, and everybody gives me the bobblehead up and down. Yeah, it sounds great. But that's a far cry from being willing to write you a substantial check and to help you start this and with all the startup cost and just getting structured and organization, all those things. There are so many unanticipated costs, you just wouldn't have any idea. So what was recommended to me was to sit down and actually do a very thorough business plan. And through that, of course, you have to create a budget. And what it did was it actually sharpened my perspective of what I needed. And I went through trying to answer every question that I would anticipate a donor would give. And then I sent it out to my closest friends and said, hey, I want you to just rip this up. And if you have a question that I can't answer or that I haven't answered in this business plan, then let me know that and show me where expose the weaknesses in the plan. And they did. So then what I found was once I put this together, then I could give the plan to somebody and they could read through it and they could say, oh, I get it. It makes sense. And then each person then has to make a decision because there's so much competition out there. And with the competition, there's so many good things that are happening. So what you have to do is make an appeal about what need you're addressing specifically in the community and tell your story as to why, how it affects you and how this need is greater than other needs, because that's oftentimes how people will give. Now, you will run into people in your network of influence who are going to write you a check because they like you or because they want to support you. And so it's not necessarily they're bought in 100% to the mission. They're bought in to you. And a lot of fundraising is relational. And so you typically don't go in, like I don't go into organizations and cold, and then ask for, you know, a $25,000 check, you have to get to know them and know their interest and know the organization and kind of what they support. And I mean, it's a lot of work. And that's why so often you need a development director or somebody that's going to help you on the fundraising end to be a part of that process, because it's so much community connection. It's so much speaking, so many speaking engagements, going out in the community, talking to civic clubs, talking to church groups, talking to different advocacy groups, and explaining what you're passionate about and why, what problem you're bringing that you're highlighting and the solution that you're bringing. And it's just a slow process, and people should not be under any sort of illusion that it's easy or that it's quick.
No, you just touched on something that a lot of people just don't, and particularly with social media, you could have 50,000 followers, and just because you have a great idea and it's a wonderful purpose and it's a great non-for-profit, just because you start it and say, well, I would certainly give to something like that, and you put it out there and you wonder why people aren't coming in droves writing you checks. It really is, and I'm seeing this with my business, with Tony Curry Radio. I create this great thing. I have these great shows, and I have this great content. I put it on, and I open my doors, and I wait for people to come in, and no one's coming in my doors for a couple of years until you go grassroots. And you talked about talking to the Civitan group, and you talk about talking to the board of directors, you know, with the Birmingham City. And I mean, it really is a pressing of the flesh, and people, when they feel comfortable and they trust you, they're much more willing to write you a check, right?
Absolutely. And this just cannot be overstated how important relationship is. So here's what I find lots of times is somebody who starts a nonprofit and let's say is going to be the executive director. They may have the most wonderful heart. I can think of one in particular, this lady that was the executive director. She was so confident, so compassionate, so good, but she was just incredibly shy and introverted. And so it wasn't that the organization didn't have support, but it was very difficult for her to go out and connect to people because it was just personally difficult for her to push her way in the door, so to speak, and to say, let me tell you about our program. Now, she would tell you about her program if you contacted her, but she was not out promoting unless asked to do it. And that fit within her personality. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a cause that you're fighting for, and it's a tough thing to be able to really say, you know what, I shouldn't be the face of this. This is solving a real problem. I can work behind the scenes. I can help. I can support. I can serve on the board of directors. But I need to bring somebody in who can speak to the community, who can be the face of it, who will go out there and press the flesh, and who will advance the cause. Because, you know, I'm amazed at the number of people that I talk to. Like Jimmy Hale's been around for 78 years now. I think, well, everybody knows about Jimmy Hale. And most people in Birmingham have heard the name. But when I sit down and talk about all the things we do, I get the same response. They say, I had no idea that y'all were doing all of this. Yeah. And I had no idea that you were reaching this level. And they will not do that just from our stories on social media and just from our newsletters we may send out. You have to get out there and tell your story.
Yeah, and Michael Coleman joins us here, the executive director of Jimmy Hale Mission. We're talking about non-for-profits, whatever your heart and passion are pushing you towards, and we got into the money aspect of it last week, and we got a ton of money stuff to get in, because obviously without that money, you can't run an organization. I want to back up a little bit. You talked about doing an extensive business plan, and that scares the bejeebers out of a lot of people, because it's a wish list, basically, of what you believe you need to run your organization, and sometimes that number you come up with is like, wow, do I really need this much to run this organization? Can you tell me how you kind of budget your business and how you go about that? Because when you do break it down, we've done it here, it's like, holy smokes, it's a large number, isn't it?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I've had several people come to me just seeking advice because they know I've started a nonprofit from scratch and built an organization. And so I just sit down and we just kind of whiteboard it. Okay, you say you want to run a program for disenfranchised youth, urban youth. Okay, well, you're going to need You're going to need a building, and you're going to need, you know, some type of facility. You're going to need staff to execute that program. But it's things oftentimes you don't think about. Well, you've got to have internet. You've got to have, you know, your utilities. You've got to have liability insurance. You've got to have insurance on the building. You've got to have transportation. If you're going to be dealing with youth who are disenfranchised, they're not going to be able to get back and forth. But here's what I think can separate a lot of people. If somebody shies away from it because of the cost, when you lay it out and expose them to it, if they shy away from that, I tell them that's a good indication that, you know, God's not calling you to this. I mean, because if people fall in love with the idea, oh, I would love to be involved with the homeless. I would love to watch somebody overcome addiction. So they want the benefit and the feel of it, that feel good, but what they don't have an understanding of is everything that's involved programmatically, insurance, well, just all the costs and that are through that process. And when you show them, they get overwhelmed and they're like, well, where could I ever get this money from? And that's what I'm saying. It's incredibly difficult. Now, some people will form service-based nonprofits, and they function only on government grants, so they don't have to do any fundraising. So you get somebody who leads the organization that just is focused on program. Hey, I might get a HUD grant. I might run a shelter, and I'm going to get all my money from HUD. But what you have to understand is, well, then if you're 100% dependent on the funds from the government, then you are a slave to those government regulations. In other words, it takes away a lot of freedom for how you might want to run the program, because they're going to say, if you want our money, it's going to come with all these conditions.
And just briefly talk about some of those conditions and what some of those conditions infer.
Yeah. So, okay. I'll use an example. So the recent LGBTQ policy, the federal government says you can't discriminate. Well, I have a women's shelter, and so I don't consider this discrimination, because I still care about people very much so who are in the LGBTQ community. But for instance, if a man is dressed or identifies, let's say, as a woman, there's no judgment on that, but I can't put him in a women's facility where there are children, because there's too much of a liability risk. My insurance wouldn't even cover it. And if there was an incident there, then it would shut down the whole mission. And so what I tell them, but I make sure that anybody who comes of that community, now I'm not talking about openly gay. We have openly gay people at our shelters. That's not what I'm referring to. I'm talking about transgender and can't get that kind of stuff insured. But if we took federal funds, we would have to do that regardless of what the consequences are. And so we make a statement. We make sure we refer somebody who is in that category to other shelters who can provide them what they need. We just simply can't do that. And so that interferes with us getting federal funds directly. And that's just a choice we have to make. We don't feel like we're discriminating at all. There's no I'm not judging that person or withholding care for them. I have a duty and responsibility to protect those who are already receiving care there, especially the children. It's just such a sensitive issue that we just can't take that kind of risk.
That's a great point. Mission-minded here with Michael Coleman from the Executive Director and, of course, the Jimmy Hale Mission. It airs every single week right here on a Wednesdays. And, of course, you can hear us wherever you get your podcast. You can go back and binge all the episodes at Tony Curry Radio. Just search Tony Curry Radio with a K. And we have ours on Spotify, or you just Google Tony Curry Radio. Mission-minded, keep your mind, your mission, your mind. We're talking about the money aspects of it. So, let's say you have built out a business plan and say you need to raise, say, $300,000. And again, it's one of those situations where it takes time. You got to go grassroots. You've reached out to friends and family. They already know what you're going to do. What do you do? No one knows what the name of your organization is. They don't know what your brand it is. You got this idea and you have your business plan. Where do you go? Who do you get in front of? Do you start getting on the phone and cold calling people? What do you do to start raising those funds?
Yeah. So the first thing I would recommend, it's very simple, is, you know, of course I'm an older guy, so we used to call it the old Rolodex, where you pull out the Rolodex and that's just people you have a relationship with, whether you out in the business community or out in the church or out in, you know, wherever you volunteer, it could be buddies you golf with or whatever. But what I do is when I did that business plan, I sent it out to all these people and just said, hey, I'd really like your feedback, your thoughts on it. And so I would get their buy-in and then I would go talk to them and just say, here's my budget. Here's what I need. I'm asking, would you be willing to support? And if so, here's what I'm asking you to support with. And I have found, now there's two different kind of approaches, and I had to learn this the hard way. Some people just say, let's say you go to somebody of means. Let's say you have somebody in your world, and most people in the middle class are going to be connected to, you know, a business owner or somebody who might be ranking as a millionaire, somebody who has a, let's just say, a lot of disposable income. Mm-hmm. And you get in front of them and you passionately tell your story and then you, you know, you make a request. And you'll begin to see people will come on board. If your program is addressing a real problem and if those people care about that problem, they will give money to support the change they want to see. If you can't get money, if you have an idea and you can't get any support for it, then you have to go back and troubleshoot. What's my approach? Number one, am I addressing what I'm seeing as a problem in our community? I may not be something everybody else is seeing. In other words, I'm doing a terrible job of convincing people that this is a problem that needs money thrown at it, or needs services. Like, hey, we've got 25 other problems that are more serious than this issue, and I want my money to go towards solving these issues first. It could be that just personally, you're not a good storyteller. You're not a good salesman. You don't have any passion. I mean, it's very difficult if you can't get excited about your idea, and if you can't project that in a way and tell the story in a clear, concise way, then that person oftentimes will look at you and say, listen, they may not even say it out loud. They may say, I love your idea, but I've really just got too many commitments right now. I can't enter into another one. So you leave there thinking everything's fine. The truth of the matter is lots of times people don't have confidence in who you are.
Yep.
And that is a tough pill to swallow. And so I've asked for honest feedback, and I'm like, hey, tell me, because I look at it as, hey, I'm going to learn. I mean, I really do. And I wish I could remember who said it, but I look at it as either I'm going to win or I'm going to learn. And so if somebody says, hey, I can't support you, then I like to come back and just ask them, hey, was my ask too much, or is the project just not right for you, or is the timing just not right? Maybe next year you'll free up your commitments. And lots of times what you'll find out is, oh, it's just the timing's not right. I'm just involved in everything and I'm not going to have any money freed up for new stuff and for another until next spring. And then, you know, you say, okay, well, can I follow up with you then and share with you what we've done and where we are? And most of the time people say, absolutely. People in our country who have wealth are used to being hit up. They understand the process. They're not shy about talking about it, but I'm just saying they have money typically for a reason. It's because they know how to earn money. They know how to manage money, but we have incredibly generous, philanthropists here in Birmingham and all over the country, really, who want to make a difference in their community. They're not opposed to giving, but they're very shrewd. And so when you go up there, you better have all the ducks in a row. And that's why I say it's very important to get your business plan vetted by people who will speak truth to you. I mean, my friends, when they sent it back to me, they bloodied that sucker up. But it was the best thing in the world. I mean, I could barely decipher all the red writing and all the red marks on it.
Yeah,
but it was the best thing for me because I was like, you're exactly right. I didn't even address this.
It is amazing too, because we obviously as human beings don't like rejection, right? And you know, I love the story where the guy's like, oh, yeah, I had to ask her out 5 times before she finally said yes. We've been married for 50 years. Those stories kind of make me chuckle, because I'm not going to be the guy that's going to ask you 5 times. I may go back twice, but after the second time, I'm going to move on. But the other thing is you brought up a great point to your friend who was the woman who had the great passionate idea, and she just was kind of an introvert. It takes time. It takes practice. I've seen this from a Tony Curry Radio standpoint. I've been in business for almost 3 years where I thought I had a great idea. I got passionate. I got around some things. And the more times I got in front of investors, the more times I met with clients and people that were spending money with a radio station, the easier it got because it just became second nature for me to talk about my business. And my business changed course several different ways. It kind of ebbed and flowed. It was kind of an amoeba in some ways. And obviously my original vision isn't what I'm doing now, but we finally found something that stuck. But I mean, I think the whole idea is you have to stay passionate with it. You can't give up. I mean, if you really believe in it and it's really going to be a force in your community or elsewhere, that you got to stick with it. And eventually God and faith and your practice will come into fruition, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will tell you, it was so awkward for me when I sat down in front of a donor for the first time and I asked them for a specific amount. Because I was very passionate in the past, and I'd say, I'd really like your support. And most people go, okay, I'll support you. I'll send you a check. But you never talked, so you don't, it was just a total roll of the dice as to what you were getting.
Yeah.
But there's kind of this old adage that, you know, if you get an unsolicited check for $5,000, that the reality is that person has the capacity to write you 10 times that amount. So a $5,000 check could become a $50,000 check if you give them the vision as to what you would do with that money. There's been so many stories about somebody walking up to an executive director of small nonprofits and them saying, if I gave you $1 million right now, what would you do with it? And if you say something like, oh, we'd put it in the bank for a rainy day fund, or, wow, I don't know. I guess I'd have to get together and talk. And you can forget that. You'll never get that $1 million. But if somebody comes up and says, if I gave you $1 million, what would you do with it? And you have a vision that's like, oh, let me tell you, we would expand capacity here. We would be able to reach this community. We would be doing this and doing that. It could totally change this community if we had those kind of resources. And so it can't just be passion. You have to also have that visionary, like, what's next? And we're doing a capital campaign right now on the side of our normal. So it's a $10 million capital campaign that I'm raising money for expansion and renovation and things we want to do on top of the normal $6 million a year we have to raise. But I'm also looking at what's next, what's even down the road, because some donors are going to say, oh, okay, well, you're going to do these things. Well, what are you going to do after that? And I want to have an answer for that. Well, my long-term vision is, my short-term vision is we want to renovate these bills. We want to do this so we can offer these services. If they say long-term, well, in 5 years, here's where I want to be. In 6 years, I want to be. So it's just very important to be able to communicate that, because when you're building confidence in somebody, lots of times people give based on who's asking them. If they have confidence in what your plan is and who you are and that you have the competencies to carry this out, then, hey, the money will follow. I've just seen it to where lots of times you have a mixture where you have a lot of confidence in a person, but their plan just isn't well thought out. You're not going to get big dollars. Or, hey, it's a great plan, but this guy right here, he doesn't have the background for this. He doesn't impress me. He's not passionate about it. And it's not going to come. So this is why sometimes executive directors may get paid more in the nonprofit world than some people look at, because it's hard to get that person who's both passionate and competent and can speak well and can, you know, cast a vision and help your board and manage staff and manage programs and all of those things combined. It's not near as many as people might think.
You're listening to Mission Minded here. Your mission on your mind, your mission is Michael Coleman, the executive director from the Jimmy Hill Mission. I'm Tony Curry, and of course, you can hear our show live a couple times every Wednesday, and also now on Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Check out our Spotify Tony Curry Radio Podcast platform, and you can listen to as many shows as you want. I was trying to think of different ways, and you could probably accentuate this or expound on it, the different types of donors. You have your occasional donors, your people that you may run into in the street, or maybe you're set up at a radio remote or something like that. You have your seasonal donors, and I know a lot of people like to give around the colder months and certainly the holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas, and then you have your life donors. Am I missing any type of donor out there?
No, I think you've got it. I think when we segment our donors, you know, we can segment by amounts, but we also have to look at, when you look at giving patterns. So, yeah, we have people that give once a year to us around Christmas time, and we just know that's when it's coming. We have others who give every month. We have some who give as they get bonuses at work. So they might give on a quarterly basis or a semi-annual basis. So it's all over the map in terms of who those people are. But I will tell you, it's very interesting when you do the research on donors, and I just continue to learn more and more about human thinking and human the psychology of giving. And there is a lot of information out there. For instance, I have found that it's easier to get that your donors who typically give $100 or less in a single gift or more as a rule, there of course are exceptions, or more call to action people. So I'll give an example. We had a floor that collapsed in one of our dorm rooms. Had some rot underneath, and it was on the bottom floor. It just kind of fell through, and we just put that out over Facebook, and we got it paid for in a matter of a couple of days. People just wanted, but there's so many donors that are, they want a call to action. They want to say, oh, I know that if I give money right now, it's going to go to that very specific thing to help this thing, and they like that. Other donors who are more than $100 or more are really more of outcome-based donors. So if you get somebody that's writing a $10,000 check, they typically do so because they like how the, where somebody comes into your organization, they're focused not on what the immediate need is, they're focused on the transformation of that individual through the program, that it's a pathway to transformation. And so they want to continue that support. So that can matter in the appeal that you write. The appeal letter you write, are you talking to your $50 donors? Or are you talking to your $5,000 donors, just in how you write an appeal and how you interact with them? And so you segment your donors, and you can do it a million different ways. You can do it on their giving patterns. You can do it on their age. We're like every other nonprofit in the world, that the vast majority of our donors, higher end donors, are going to be people 50 to 80 who have less expenses in life. You know, their kids are grown, they're gone, and they have a lot more disposable income. It's much tougher for somebody in their 40s who's putting their kid, fixing to put their kids through, you know, three kids through college, to be able to give more, even though they may absolutely love your organization. So what you have to do then is, with that age group, is you have to find ways to engage them even before they can write a big check.
So, yeah, and I have found, too, that people in that age group, too, normally will give, obviously, to more than one organization, too. They'll have five or six different organizations. One may drop off, one may pick up. And so you're one of a few, and obviously you're fighting for that money as well, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And just an example, so the young people today, if you look at the millennial generations in their 30s right now, you'll do an advertisement like, hey, give up a cup of coffee a month at Starbucks. If you'll donate $10 a month, and the idea is you want to get them giving while they're in their 30s, and they can handle things like, you know, their Netflix is $12 a month, a cup of coffee, $8. They're used to bite-sized things like that. If you were to ask them for, you know, I want $100 a month, that's way too big. You know, but that's the world. They've surrounded themselves with a stream. I pay $10 here, I pay $15 here. So anything in that neighborhood, that's how you appeal to them. So you just have to understand that when you're messaging and transition your message to who you're speaking to and even your ask. But we started, just to get the younger generation connected to us, and what we're doing is we started a young professionals board. Some people call it a junior board, but it's a networking opportunity. But now they get to come in and they get to see behind the curtain, and we want them to understand so that they will grow. They might be future board members, but they're probably going to be future community leaders and people of, you know, some means. And so when they get up where they can donate, you know, the $1,000 a year or $10,000 a year. We want them to already love Jimmy Hill Mission, to have a spot in their heart. So right now we're winning their heart. We're not winning their pocketbook. That's coming many years down the road. But you can't wait till they get in their 40s and 50s to start trying to win their hearts.
Yeah.
You have to do it. So it's a lot of effort and a lot of time and just a lot. It's necessary for long-term stability.
Michael, what I love about this show, and we got to wrap it up, and it's another amazing show. I learned so much by talking with you, but as a business owner, I've run my own non-for-profit in probably not the best way, and I kind of like want to start it all over again now that I've had some conversations with you. But even if you're running a business, a small business, and it's not a non-for-profit, there are so many different things I could take away from our conversations and just the passion aspects of it, and the business decisions and the grassroots work and all the things you got to do to get out there and push your business. Thank you so much for your time. We will catch up next week, my friend. I appreciate you.
Enjoyed it as always, brother.
Thank you, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.